Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're reflecting on Brexit.
Reflexit Brexit.
For those of you that are not that into geopolitics, at the end of this podcast, we're going to try to wrap this up in a way that applies some of the insights to the culture of your family and the culture of your church. So even if you're not into like what's going on in Europe, don't get lost in this podcast, because there are some important implications that have purchase for our work as leaders in our families and in our church. Brexit, in case you've been under a rock like Dusty has for the last 6 days.
Hey now.
Is British exit, the vote in England to leave European Union, which of course has been getting all kinds of press coverage over the past few weeks. And we thought, man, it's a huge cultural topic. We should probably engage it and offer maybe some reflections on some of the gospel nuances here. And there's one particular angle on this that really interests me, and that is the question of, because it's a question that's not just being asked in Europe, it's being asked in the United States, and it's being asked in lots of places right now. And you could say it's a question about immigration, but really it's a broader question about political and social philosophy. And the question is this: is it legitimate to say that any sort of nationalism is wrong? Is it legitimate to say if we want to close our borders or set any limits on who we would welcome into a society, that automatically is wrong? The reason that's a live question is because there are many people who, in all sort of writing about immigration, whether it's about Europe or America, are saying such things. Andrew Solomon recently wrote this about Brexit. This reflects an archaic ethnic notion of collectivity that shares ground with racism. So when sort of a nationalistic spirit of like, man, let's go back to sort of British sovereignty, when that's being equated with racism, I think that's a dangerous overstatement. But that's not just Andrew Solomon saying that about Britain. A lot of people would say something similar about any attempts to limit immigration in the United States, that really it's unloving, it's unjust, and that the gospel would call us to say anyone who's weak, vulnerable, needy, a refugee, someone who's been displaced, we should welcome them in. And the question we want to ask is like, well, are there decently appropriate limits to that? Is it fair to say we can only do that to a certain point? Is it fair to set some boundary on how and who we let in to a society, to a country, to a family? This is one of the issues that's getting stirred up in light of the Brexit vote. And, certainly it's not the only thing we could talk about with relation to Brexit, but I think it's one of the interesting gospel questions, because it presses some interesting issues. And because I think I hear a lot of Christians sort of making a facile argument that says, man, if we say we should set any kind of boundaries on immigration, then that's unloving and Christ wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and this definitely has implications right now for our political moment. I mean, Donald Trump gets a lot of traction, whether positive or negative, related to his statements on border security and building a wall. And so I think it's very much a real thing for us. And I think especially for states. I mean, I know there's Texit now? There are people making jokes about Texas leaving.
There's a Nexit in the Netherlands. There's a push for Frexit in France, and there's a push for Texit in Texas. And I was like, hey, man, if Texas, I might be in for that. I'm all for the Lone Star Republic coming back. Yeah. So
I mean, it's like larger than most of America anyway.
They think they're their own country anyway.
They act like their own country anyway, so it would be appropriate.
Well, here's another interesting angle. I'm not really moving the conversation forward here with this comment, but there are connections to immigration and culture. I think that's another piece of it too, is Ooh. Nationalism and culture. Mm-hmm. But where some also want to take the argument is that genetics play a role in that. Are genetics and culture connected? And that's where you get into a language that does sound racist, so if you look at the continent of Africa or the continent of Europe or Asia, why are there clusters of culture within certain genetic groupings that aren't in others? And so that's another element of this that I think why some folks are like, hey, nationalism can kind of sound a little bit racist because people start making these comments about, well, only white people have such and such culture and only Latinos this kind of culture. And so, like I said, I'm not moving the conversation forward, just saying that there are those that really do push a nationalism that is sort of connected not only to culture but to race.
So here's a more nuanced voice. Yuval Levin, writing in the National Review, says, dismissing the growing desire for and force of nationalism as pure bigotry or xenophobia is neither rational nor fair. The fact that a fervent national spirit can invite and incite resentment, exclusion, and hate is beyond question, but it need not be the equivalent of any of these. And it is up to political leaders and political cultures to draw crucial distinctions. Really, there's a similar issue to this 15 years ago or so in the United States related to the question of teaching English in public schools and whether we should have a primary language or whether, with especially the large Latino migration to the United States, whether it's okay to have sort of dual language classes or to teach kids entirely in Spanish and not expect them to learn English. It was really a question about this same thing. Is it okay to expect people to assimilate to a certain national culture or not? And I think the gospel has some interesting things to say here, and a well-reasoned biblical theology probably has some interesting wrinkles here. So on the one hand, I think we can say, well, first of all, we can agree with you of 11, xenophobia, fear of strangers, or sort of like a harsh, brash nationalism, like what you see in Trump, of sort of like, we'll just keep all people that aren't like us out, is contrary to the gospel. The gospel is a welcoming, hospitable, all tribes, tongues, and nations sort of message and spirit. And so I think we can immediately reject any sort of nationalism that sort of is fear-based or that's driven out of a desire to exclude. Mm-hmm. I think that's different than saying any attempts to draw boundaries are unloving, out of keeping with the spirit of Christ, and unchristian. Because actually what we see in Scripture, even if you think about the Old Testament, and if you trace sort of biblical theology in the Old Testament, you see God's heart is always for the nations. He's always telling Israel that they are a light to the nations. However, he also gives them a defined identity, a defined culture, a defined law, a defined land, a defined kingship. And all of that particularity is for the sake of the glory of God getting to the nations. So you don't see in the Old Testament a competition between particular identity and global mission, but you see those two things working together. And the same is true as we'd follow the trajectory into the New Testament. And so it's probably overly simplistic to say the Christian answer is welcome anyone, anywhere, for any time and any reason.
Yeah. And it gets to the question of does culture matter? Do cultures matter? Does it matter to have a defined identity nationally? And is that okay? And if we start to muddy the waters in the sense that all cultures are equally, righteous, equally just, that we just kind of blur the line there, then that's a dangerous footing that I don't think we would. And so that's where, for those that kind of want to blur this line of immigration and just welcome all people in, then it becomes, well, then is there no such thing as a culture? What kind of culture are we creating? Is that going to be the kind of culture that actually thrives and is righteous and just and actually provides a grounding for gospel work? Or does it just become this amorphous mess and chaos and free-for-all that both politically and even as far as like the church working within a culture is healthy and good and right? So I think if you start to push on the logic of some of these arguments, it becomes, I think, fairly clear that, yeah, culture does matter. Nationalism, rightly held, is a good thing. Is a helpful thing.
Well, and you even see, it's interesting having just come through the book of Acts, right? And realizing one of the main tensions in Acts is between Jew and Gentile. And there are theological questions surrounding that. Do I have to be Jewish to be really a part of the people of God? The answer to that is no. But the cultural questions of, am I okay to be culturally Jewish or culturally Gentile? The book of Acts overwhelmingly answers that question. Yes, if you're a Jew, you can continue to practice circumcision. You can continue to follow the dietary laws. They don't get you any closer to God. They don't earn you any more righteousness, but you're free to have that cultural framework and to follow those cultural practices. Likewise, mm-hmm. if you're a Gentile, as long as you don't participate in idolatrous temple worship. You're free to even eat meat that's been sacrificed to a pagan idol because it doesn't mean anything. So we see this interesting blend in the book of Acts of a complete sort of denying of there being any cultural foot ahead. Like no one has a cultural advantage when it comes to the gospel, but there being great freedom to welcome the beauty of diverse human culture. It's interesting to think how this affects the church too, because some leaders would say you can only have one culture in a church. A church is monocultural. It can be multi-ethnic. It can have many different sort of races and ethnicities and peoples represented in it. But our job is to create a gospel culture. And so it's interesting because sort of the language of multiculturalism implies that there can be many cultures, but really what you're, the question you're asking is a good one, Chris. Isn't it true that in any group of people, there's really a monoculture? And the question is, what are sort of the defining elements of that culture? Is a defining element of American culture the English language and a democratic republic form of government? And is it okay to say if you come here as an immigrant, you have to learn English and you have to learn to participate in democracy? I think we're saying that's okay. And I think some of the questions in Britain have been, certainly some of them have been driven by xenophobia and by all kinds of, you know, bigotry. But the core questions of, can we maintain a British identity, or are we going to be subsumed into this sort of culturally amorphous Euro-ness? That's a fair question to ask. And I don't think a question that militates against a robust understanding of the gospel.
So I think too, as the church, I think we can appreciate the globalization that is taking place and how the world really has become flat, and just the movement of people, the movement of technology, the movement of information, that our world is really small, and appreciate that and really lean into that, take advantage of that, the ability to travel and what that means for mission and all of the good aspects of that, while at the same time recognizing that in many ways the most politically beneficial system for societies to flourish for human freedom is a national sovereignty, and I think this is where with many in Britain was that the concerns of Europe as a continent and European Union outweighed the concerns of the people of Britain. And so their sovereignty, how the British wanted to make decisions and live as a society was being steamrolled. And so for, you know, even politically as the church, we can say, look, national sovereignty actually is good for people and it allows cultures to thrive. And so we can support that. Now, I'm not saying you have to be a thoughtful Christian. You had to have supported Brexit. But again, I don't think it is a racist to say national sovereignty is a good thing. And let countries sort of dictate decisions based on what is good for them. Because you think even in the church as pastors, like my role as a pastor is to care for First City Church. And if the decisions I'm making are more benefiting, hypothetically, Acts 29 as a network at the expense of First City Church, well, then I'm not being a good pastor because I'm not caring for the people in front of me. And I think the same principle can apply to politicians, whether it be the state or national level.
Well, again, Yuval Levin says this: many things could be said about Brexit, but one is that it strongly suggests that globalism is not the future and nationalism is not the past, which I think is a good way to summarize what you're saying. Yeah, there are good emphases, but it's not true to say globalism is the future and nationalism is the past. He's saying, nope, it's more nuanced and more intricate than that.
I always like it when Chris starts fighting for nationalism and tribes.
It sounds so crazy.
That's good. I just want you to know we recorded that.
Yeah. just this is a lesson from history. Go with the moderate nationalists, not the crazy ones. Listen to the moderates. While there is a moderate push for nationalism, lean into that, politicians, because what comes after that is much more crazy, hysterical, and not healthy at all.
It's interesting that there once was a time when Europe was unified, and it was under the Roman Catholic Church, right?
Unified in some sense, with scare quotes around it.
But
scare quotes.
That also led to a lot of
right.
Regional war.
I guess what I'm saying is when we try to unify under man-made institutions, we've seen over history that those things have fallen, those things fail. And the European Union seems like it's kind of breaking at the seams a little bit, some would say. I don't know. It's just it's exciting in one way to see that the gospel over the last 2,000 years has been unifying people all over the world, and it hasn't meant one language, hasn't meant one culture. It's transcended all of that, unifying people over that long a period of time. And so it's fun to see that we are unified by something much greater than a union of nations.
Well, and that's where the gospel does give us, I think, the right way forward, even for those who don't worship Jesus, is to see the beauty of what the unity of the church looks like, which is very culturally diverse, takes on a different expression in every culture, locally led everywhere, but united in the worship of one Savior, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. And so in the church, you have this beautiful unity and diversity. And I think that is in most Western societies, that's actually one of the foundations of the right kind of nationalism, is to say we should be able to preserve our unique heritage and culture, and at the same time find a broader unity that can unify us across boundaries and borders and cultures and languages and all of these things. Mm. Of our Christian brothers in the British world, I'm sure probably half of them voted leave and half of them voted remain. So I don't think there's a right or wrong vote in terms of Brexit itself, but I think it does raise a chance to talk about some of these interesting questions of, is it okay to embrace a national culture? Is that in line with the gospel? And I would argue it is, as long as it's done rightly, as long as it's done with sort of the right spirit and heart.
Chris, you were reading somebody who had a response to it just in light of church planning. What was that all about?
Yeah, one of the Acts 29 Europe guys was writing about why he was leaning towards supporting Brexit, is because if Britain stays within the European Union, just the ease with which church planting can happen, related to the movement of people, related to finances, even healthcare for church planters and their families, and so just the benefits sort of logistically of church planting is strengthened by being part of the European Union. Now, I read that, and you know, not being British or
you
living
disagreed?
In Europe, I read that and I'm going, okay, I don't want to
so
sound
British
like
of you.
Yeah, an ignorant American. But I did. I disagreed with I didn't necessarily disagree with the sense that, yeah, I can understand that you would want to keep those things in place and that makes sense. But I did disagree with the notion that sort of the practicalities of church planting being sort of a, like, it just struck me as a little naive, a little like reductionistic, in the sense of like, if that's kind of my gauge, the ease of church planting logistics to make kind of larger political decisions, that's, because there could be a lot of things that, again, maybe make church planting easier that aren't necessarily healthy for a nation or healthy for a government system. Even like economically, there could be situations where, man, it's easier to plant a church in such and such place if they're, you know, their whatever dollar bill or whatever their version of currency, it stays really low. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's good for them. So
in that answer, you're saying you have to be a contributor of culture, not just for your own agenda, right?
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that ease of church planting is the best gauge of political realities. I don't know. Heretical as an Acts 29 pastor?
Don't you think that if that brother's sitting here, though, he's saying, like, hey, man, what does it matter? Like, the easier it is to get more churches planted, and the faster and the better and the more financially lucrative, let's get that done instead of let's do it if it's easier.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to push too hard against that, but I would say, but what cost? Mm-hmm. Like, at what cost? Like, the loss of national sovereignty, then the church just kind of comes across, I think, as politically naive, or potentially we just are so myopic on our own agenda that we come across as, you know, like
naive,
oh, I don't
also,
care about other, you know, care about my society.
Naive, but also destructive to the rest of culture.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, yeah.
for some listeners who like enjoy geopolitics, this has probably been a very stimulating podcast. For others who are not so geopolitical in their thinking, maybe we bored you to death talking about Brexit. I want to bring it back to something that's really foundational for all of us when it comes to the local church and the family. And that is, one thing this vote teaches us is that culture matters to people. And one thing you saw the British people overwhelmingly saying in this process of voting on this referendum is, we actually care that we're British. We want to preserve the culture of being British, and we feel that threatened by this broader European thing. What that suggests, that I think is just a simple application for us, is the culture you're building in your gospel community, the culture you're building in your church, the culture you're building in your family actually matters, and it's meaningful to people. When they're a part of something that feels like home, that feels compelling, there's always a strong desire to see that continued and furthered. And so I would say it this way: families that have a weak family culture and churches that have a weak culture are not compelling. Mm-hmm. The families where the kids are the healthiest are always families that have a strong sense of family culture. There are practices and rituals and rhythms and jokes and, you know, things that define this family that make us us. And likewise, for a church, beyond just unity around the gospel distinctives, there are sort of ways of doing things and sort of shared stories and values that unify us and that bring all of our diversity and give it some sort of unity in expression. And those things matter. So whether you're leading yourself, whether you're leading a family, whether you're leading a gospel community or leading a church, you need to give thought to what culture are you building, and how compelling is it? How does it assimilate the outsider, pull them in, give them something to want to be a part of, and also transform them and make them a part of things in a meaningful way?
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. If you happen to download the podcast via iTunes, please go to the iTunes store and give us a nice review. Give us 4 or 5 stars. That'd be really great.
Five stars.
Don't go if you're going to give a bad idea.
Yeah, don't do that.
If it sucks, just tell Mike. We'll fix it. We'll make it better.
Don't tell iTunes.
And with that said, we hope that you join us next week for another Wednesday Conversation.